Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Today's show is a conversation with Eric Gunderson from formerly of Locked On Blazers, currently at the Associated Press, as well as the LeBron Wire and the USA Today Network. Today's show is all about what the Cavs can learn from Portland, from the Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum partnership, what the organizational structure has done to sort of power up those guys, and just everything that the Cavs can learn from what is the best modern example of two ball dominant scoring guards working. Eric is one of my absolute favorite people to talk to. Give him a follow on Twitter at Eric_Gunderson. Check out his work again at the Associated Press and at the LeBron Wire over in USA Today's network. Announcement for me is that I am writing for Forbes as well. I'm writing about the Grizzlies, going to do some Cleveland Brown stuff and some other things there. So check that out as well. You can find that on my Twitter feed at CWMWrites. And today I'm just gonna, this will be the last show until next Monday. We're gonna have a bunch of shows with folks like Jake Chapman from 92.3, James Rapine from 92.3 here in Cleveland, and a whole bunch of other really great people on the Cavs as we get closer and closer to the season. Gonna do as much as we can to really drive content this whole month, give you guys and girls some podcasts to kind of give you some Cavs talk. Gonna play the ads here at the beginning, get those out of the way after this intro, so just to pay some of the bills. Support of Lockdown Cavs does come from Manscaped, the number one men's below-the-belt grooming tool. You've seen them on Shark Tank. Manscaping offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. You get 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. That's 20% at manscaped.com, promo code LOCKEDON. Locked On NFL is also a great NFL show for you. Make sure you listen to the new Locked On NFL with the expert analysis of former scout Matt Williamson, hosted by Brian Peacock. Locked On NFL is your daily national podcast on all things NFL with Matt's unique insight on the game. And check out Locked On Browns as well. And then NBA player and Locked On podcast analyst Trevor Booker joined the Monday episode of Locked On NBA. He broke down the deals, left one team out as a title contender that will surprise you, and is high on one team more in the West than the others. Get that at Locked On NBA. So thank you so much for listening. Have a great weekend. Enjoy today's show. All the other shows, folks like Emmett Damerill and a bunch of others, people that we've talked about that I'm just frankly forgetting at this point, like Ben Pfeiffer talking about the draft. Trevor Magnotti is going to be back in the coming weeks too. But thanks so much for listening. Enjoy your weekend. And here's today's show with Eric Gunderson from the Associated Press and the LeBron Wire.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Joining me now is someone I'm very glad to be talking to again. You used to hear him on Locked On Blazers, but now you can read him at the LeBron Wire and in the Associated Press. It's Eric Gunderson. Eric, what's going on, man?
Dude, not much. Stoked to be on Locked On Cavs. Stoked to be chilling, talking to poops with you, man.
Are you enjoying your summer? Like, are you enjoying like the hiatus we're getting right now?
Oh, absolutely. I wish it was a little bit longer, to be honest with you. I mean, it's just like, I know that they're going to push it back. They might push it back a little bit because of the World Cup, but the FIBA World Cup. But I mean, I'm really enjoying the hiatus, although I am at the same time very excited for the upcoming season, just because it's going to be, you know, it's probably the most wide open it's been ever.
Yeah, you're going to have a crazy year. I am not covering the Cavs. It's going to be interesting, but not like bananas, and you'll have like the Nurkic thing, and you get to see what House on Whitehead works.
Yeah, it's a different type of exciting.
Yes. I'm also excited that I'm like sort of happy. I'm like not happy, but also happy that we're not going to, like, Lillard's not playing and Love's not playing. So, like, I'm also excited that I get to just watch FIBA, and I'll have to, like, do little things with, like, Delly or whomever, but, like, Kevin Love not playing sort of takes away like the big intrigue of that for me, at least. I'm sure for you, it's no Dame means something.
Oh yeah,
and totally. No CJ.
Yeah, no Dame and CJ. I mean, I thought both of them were gonna like have a real chance at being one of those guys, and it just didn't, you know. And I respect it because it's like it's the most wide open race there has been, and literally, basically anybody who matters is not playing in the World Cup for the most part. Like, Ben Simmons is not playing in it. You know, there's a lot of guys that are just skipping out on it because they think it seems like the consensus amongst all the players is that everyone thinks it's the championship is for the taking, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I think Portland's going to have a different kind of year than Cleveland, obviously. But I think Cleveland is going to be fun. It's just going to be kind of a, you know, kind of a willy-nilly year. I'm excited.
Yeah, so the reason people, I brought Eric on specifically, is because he covers the Blazers, knows this team very well. They're the team that I think, fair or not, is going to be like the benchmark of the Cavs trying to pair Colin Sexton and Darius Garland together. Now, this is the infancy of this. I would say that in the reverse of what Portland did, I think Garland has a little bit more star potential. He was the second guy picked in this. In Portland's case, you had Lillard go number 6 in 2012, and then McCollum went number 10 in 2013. But take me back there, Eric. When they took these two guys, and these were their two lottery picks, and the lead up, and just for some context of this, so in 2009 they had Victor Claver was the 22nd overall pick. 2010, Elliott Williams. 2011, Nolan Smith from Duke, and also John Diebler from Ohio State in the second round. And then 2012, you take Dame at 6, Myers Leonard, who's now with the Heat at 12, at 11. Will the Thrill at 40, and then the next year you take McCollum, and when you take McCollum and Lillard those 2 years, those are the guys more than anyone else, except LaMarcus Aldridge's influence is obviously felt in this, because he was the guy before Dame. Those are their two guys. Did you expect them to be this type of dynamic pairing when they initially took two smaller scoring guards back to back?
I mean, I think that was one of the potential realities that they looked at, because I think, you know, part of Neil Olshay's time in Portland has been managing multiple timelines at the same time. I think that's been a big part of what has, you know, kind of represented his Portland tenure is – at the time that they drafted CJ, so obviously when they drafted Damian Lillard, let's go back, they had just traded Gerald Wallace to the Brooklyn Nets to get the pick that became Damian Lillard, and they had just come off a year when Raymond Felton came to them after they traded Andre Miller to the Nuggets to get Raymond Felton, and you know, Felton was a complete bust after, and he followed Andre Miller, who frankly was a fan favorite at the time. And then, so the Felton thing completely goes haywire, and they have LaMarcus, they have Wesley Matthews, and they have Nick Batum under contract. So they just go, okay, we need a point guard. So they get Damian Lillard, who, you know, was sought after by a lot of teams at 6. You know, there were a lot of teams that were trying to get up to get him in that draft, and they got him to be their point guard of the future. And he starts out playing really well. I mean, I think his first game he had 23 points and like 8 assists against the Lakers in a win with, and that was the this is going to be fun Lakers. Dwight Lakers. But yeah. But what I'm saying is he plays really well and the team is really good, and they get the 10th pick in the draft the following year to get CJ McCollum. And I think there were a lot of people that were really hyped on CJ just because he had he kind of had the similar profile to Dame, but I don't think at the time that he was drafted, people thought this is the backcourt of the future.
And to serve some context here, CJ was brought along very slowly, right? Like the CJ
broke his foot. He broke his foot in the first week of training camp his rookie year after breaking his foot in college. And so he basically missed – his rookie year was basically a complete throwaway. And then his second year, he broke his finger and then basically was also a complete throwaway until the very end of the year where he played really, really well in the postseason. But that's not really a replicable path, I don't think, for at least for Cleveland in this case, is that the difference between Lillard and McCollum is they both came in on like pretty good teams already. You know what I mean? They had a lot of already pretty decent players which is one thing that I think is important in talking about their story. I don't want to skip that part.
No, we're going to get to that because I think Aldridge and Love are sort of interesting players in this. And Portland, obviously, a little bit, I think, further up than what we expect the cast to be. But I pull up McCollum's basketball reference sheet. So as you mentioned, age 22, 2013-14 as a rookie, only 38 games, only averaged 5.3 points. Next year, 62 games, he starts three games for the first time, but still only playing 15 minutes, averaged 6.8 points. Year three, a huge jump to 34.8 minutes a game and 20.8 points. Then he averages his age 25, averages 23. He's averaged 20 points the last four seasons after being, like, not that good his first 2 years. That's a huge leap. Dame has obviously been a stud kind of since he came in. He's kind of been the guy in that team. But they're the same rough ages. They're both kind of locked into them now based on assuming Dame, you know, picks up that player option and McCollum with signing that new extension. But considering there is, like, some overlap there and there is just some, like, if you think about the modern game, a little bit of concern about what these guys, what their ceiling might be. What has made them, and what has contributed to them actually being such a good pairing? Like, what is it? Is it their personality? Like, what is it about their games that has allowed them to be malleable and then, like, really be the engines of this team being very good and having a shot in this crazy Western Conference this year?
Well, I think it's, on one very basic level, they are both very great shooters from the outside. They are both... can also isolate on their own guys and score, whether that be in the mid-range, getting to the basket. And I think that both of them have done a really good job of kind of mixing and matching what the other one does really well into their games. Because, you know, McCollum, when he came into the league, was not a very explosive finisher at the basket. And I think he's gotten a lot better at that. And I think Dame, to his credit, has also become a much better mid-range player, a much more crafty player around the basket, which McCollum was always good at. And that has been a work, you know, that has been a whole process to get that happening. And I wrote about that David Vanterpool tried to kind of merge the two games together and working out together. But I think, obviously, you know, those are the results. But I think what the reason it works together is that both of those guys really understand that they have to work hard together. And then they also both like each other. I mean, they do like each other. And that, I think this most recent season of the NBA, I think, has made people think about that a little bit more. But I do think it definitely matters in how they've improved together and how they've been willing to kind of learn together and kind of learn from each other, that they just both like each other. Obviously, they have great skill sets, but I think the fact that they're willing to work together and kind of learn from each other is a huge part of why they're so good.
Okay, so I think that's really key because I think every time I feel like I watch Portland, every time I watch them, there's usually a couple minutes a game where, like, they're on the floor together, and Dame will, like, basically, like, kind of, like, he knows it's CJ's moment. He knows CJ, like, is feeling it that night. He knows this is, like, a game where CJ can take over. He, like, doesn't force himself in those situations. I can't imagine, like, and CJ obviously is comfortable with ball, does kind of the same thing. I cannot imagine that, like, that pairing can work if those two guys aren't just on the same wavelength, but, like, willing to do that and, like, are checking their ego enough to do that, right? Like, I just can't imagine, like, there's a pairing where two guys have similarities like that and both have aspirations and whatnot, where, like, if they don't, if there's not that check there that they, like, there's no way that works if that pairing doesn't work in that way.
I mean, isn't Houston, like, the perfect example of how that doesn't normally work for that long? Like, those guys couldn't make it two full seasons without, you know, hating each other. And, you know, Lillard and McCollum have been together since the 2015-16 season, you know. So they're going into their fifth season together, you know, as a pairing. Like, that doesn't happen a lot. And you see, like, the Brad Beal and John Wall, like, you know, with the Everybody Eats stuff, with, like, you know, how Beal would kind of it seemed like he was kind of shading Wall at times, and just, like, these it happens all the time. I mean, it happens with every team pretty much, and Portland, whether they've kept it under wraps to a certain point or they just really actually like each other that much. I mean, I don't think they could fake it. You know, I don't think that they could fake it for this long. So that's a huge factor in why they have worked out, is that they have that kind of – and I've even asked Lillard about that in certain games when, you know, McCollum just has it going, has the hot hand. And, you know, Dame just knows to – and he gets out of the way. And it's also – it's like I think he realizes that it just makes his life a lot easier. And he knows that he's going to have his moments when the time comes.
All right. So how does LaMarcus Aldridge factor into this?
Having a competent offensive player on your team as a young guard, especially at the forward spot, is very, very useful and helpful. And I think, I think Lillard would have been very, very good to great no matter what. But it certainly helped that he had an all-star caliber post player, pick and pop player, pick and roll player on his team when he came into the league.
LaMarcus and Dame, there was just – that obviously didn't work out. LaMarcus chooses to leave. That sort of does make way for what we're kind of seeing with that duo now. But when Dame in particular was kind of coming up, and obviously he was, you know, figured some stuff out early, did some stuff really well. How did just having a guy that he could lean on, and with the Cavs like Sexton and Garland could have that same kind of guy in Kevin Love, how much did you think that actually helped him? And has he said anything where he's like, yes, like this really did help me kind of find my way before I was ready to be the guy for this group?
You know, I think Dame was a little bit more just like cautious of not trying to step on anybody's toes mm-hmm. when he came into the league, about not trying to necessarily be the guy in that way. I think he was really big on like respecting the vets and respecting that it was LaMarcus's team when he came in. But everyone knew that Dame was the new franchise point guard. And so like there is a natural give and take there. And I think that he it wasn't necessarily, I think, a personal thing, because I think Dame really seeked that. And LaMarcus and Dame have both talked about this now, and since it's kind of hindsight, that Dame really seeked a little bit of guidance from LaMarcus, that LaMarcus really wasn't he wasn't giving that. He wasn't, I think, ready to be that leader. And I don't know if he's naturally that guy. But, you know, when that happened, Dame I think still really benefited on the court from having a guy that he could say, I'm going to post up with, or a guy that I'm going to play pick and roll with. And even if LaMarcus, you know, LaMarcus talked about it, but he wasn't going to be like gushing over it. Having a scoring point guard that could just create and score on his own and drive to the basket or shoot the three and really create other opportunities for him, that also really helped LaMarcus. So I think they both helped each other. But I think that it did really help Dame's development to have a guy that's just, you know, so good, so competent, just run pick and roll with again and again was just a really useful thing for him in his early development, for sure.
Was LaMarcus accommodating?
He wasn't not accommodating. I just think I don't think that they were. He was definitely accommodating in the sense that he wanted to win. And he wanted to do the best for the team, and he knew that Dame could help him accomplish things. I don't necessarily think that he was like he didn't take Dame under his wing. No, that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. So how does – and then the other question I kind of have here with looking at this situation is – Terry Stotts has been kind of the guy that's kind of brought this all together, but I believe – McMillan coached them too as well, correct? Am I wrong on the timeline?
No. McMillan was gone. Okay. McMillan was fired the year before they drafted. So the lockout year happened, and they fired Nate McMillan that year. And then that's when they traded Gerald Wallace to the Nets and then got the pick for Lillard. And then Stotts was Lillard's first. So Stotts, Lillard, and Olshea have been together for 7 years, okay, or now going to 8. So that has been the three faces that are still around from Dame's kind of era.
Okay, so how does having Stotts in place and him being a guy that is obviously doing a very good job coaching them, and Olshea is sort of the brains, How do you think that has helped that duo sort of work in a structural sense? Like, obviously, they figured it out on court. They figured out the personalities. Dame is obviously revered around the league for his leadership. That's a big part of this. That is something that does not come up when you pull up basketball reference pages that we probably don't talk about enough. But, like, when you look at the structure of their organization and the stability you seem to have there, how do you feel like that and that has contributed? And, of course, those guys being good at their jobs. How do you feel like that has contributed to the success of this pairing?
Well, I do think that there is kind of a symbiotic relationship, you know, with him, with Damian Lillard being the star player of the team. I think also, so it goes a lot of different ways. Obviously, Neil Olshey drafted Damian Lillard, but, you know, Dame's more daily, day-to-day interactions are with Terry Stotts. And Terry Stotts, on the first day, you know, gave Damian Lillard the keys to the offense, let Lillard play through mistakes, let him become, you know, the superstar point guard that he is today. And so there have been a lot of times when there's been a lot of outside speculation and a lot of outside rumors about Terry Stotts and his job status. And I think a lot of times that Damian Lillard's respect and reverence for Terry Stotts has oftentimes, you know, helped Terry Stotts. And I don't think that, you know, so that's a relationship that is there. And then Neil Olshey just, you know, kind of having that relationship with those three guys and them all working together, I think Stotts knows what to expect from Olshey, and I think Olshey knows what to expect from Stotts. And I think that relationship works really well, and they kind of have a really good understanding of each other as well. And so I think over the years, and now with McCollum there as well, you know, all of those guys have really come to understand one another. And I think that that institutional knowledge about what to expect with your team and your organization and what your culture is, I think is very valuable and has been something that this team has relied upon to get to where they are now, because they didn't just, you know, there was no big free agent signing. There was no, you know, there really weren't that many big trades either. I mean, when they got Nurkic, which is probably one of their biggest ones, they got him for, they got a first round pick in return to take him. So, you know, like no one was like saying like, oh, wow, that's going to take them to the next level. So it is, I think all of that comes together, and I think the stability is a huge part that they really have an identity in the organization.
And then just the two, like the development with David Vanderpool, who's obviously just left, which seems important and kind of like one of those things that's hard to know from the outset, but he's well regarded for the development there. Just the and Stotts is just system in general. This just probably can't work if you don't have those two things there, correct? And this is like one of the, when I think about the Cavs, when I think about like what the Cavs can learn from Portland, I think the big things are I would not be in a rush to trade Kevin Love for one. I think if he's willing to sort of help these guys grow, I think you keep him around. Number two, I think Beeline system I like the idea of it. I want to see if it works. And number two, I think with Kobe Altman and what they seem to be trying to establish a culture, I think they're taking the lessons from Portland. We need to see if they actually can do it. As you know, when you covered the LeBron Cavs for the LeBron Wire, like the Cavs were not exactly the most stable, coherent organization. This is their chance to do that. And I think if this Garland Sexton thing is going to work, and again, they're year one, year two, not like year three, year four, really, for those guys. And when they started really playing together, I feel like those things just like have to be in place. Like yes, the guys have to prove themselves too, but like I think you need to have everything in terms of development, your front office, ownership, your coach, everything in line to make something like this work and invest in it in some way.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. If I'm Cleveland, I don't necessarily want to just get rid of Kevin Love, because it's really helpful for two young guards to have a very reliable offensive option on your team. It makes them look better. It makes them feel better. It's just like there's just so many different things that are there when you have a guy like Kevin Love that I wouldn't necessarily want to trade unless you can get something for him. But yeah, I mean, it's not something you're trying to replicate, but it's not something that's like that impossible. It's like, you know, it was two guys that they both worked hard and worked out against each other. And I think that's one thing that really has served not only Dame and CJ, but other guards that have come through Portland's program, like Shabazz Napier, who was basically out of the league before he came to Portland, and then, you know, is working out with Dame and CJ every day and gets a contract with Brooklyn and, you know, sticks in the league for a few more years that probably he would not have had. Anthony Simons, another guy that a lot of people are talking about now, that are a lot of people are hyped on. He gets to play against Dame and CJ every day. And I know that David Vanderpool is no longer there, but I think having really great players go against really great players every day, it's iron sharpens iron. You know, I think it's really, and I think that that's when I did my reporting about Dame and CJ with David Vanderpool, that kind of turned up. And I think that that's a lesson that I think that, you know, you can't just carbon copy, but I think is a good direction to follow. And I think that, you know, having those guys, Jordan Clarkson may not be like, you know, the greatest guard in the world, but it's like, you know, having good, competent guards that you can go against every day, that matters. That helps, because that's really what builds the habits to be great.
So, like, that's, like, I think Delly is, like, a good, like, Delly is, like, not what he was at his, like, coffee-drinking peak, but, like, the dude is going to come in and, like, grind and practice. He's going to teach these guys how to work. Like, that matters. Like,
yeah, it does. It does. I mean, Dame, when he was a youngster, he didn't have, you know, star point guards. He was going up against Ronnie Price, who Olshay brought in to be like a veteran presence, who, you know, he was a guy that basically just stuck around in the league because he was a hard worker and a guy that showed up and worked hard. And then Earl Watson, another guy that the Blazers brought in when Dame was in his second season to kind of just be like a guy that could mentor him, show him the ropes. They also brought in Mo Williams that second season. So I think having a guy like Delly for sure, and even a guy like Jordan Clarkson, who's not, you know, he's been a guy that's stuck in the league, got some contracts, he's got respect amongst with other guys in the league. And I think that, you know, having a guy like Delly and Jordan Clarkson to go against is good, because like you can really battle against guys. It's not like you're just walking in there and you're just gonna, you know, have it easy every day. And I think that that really is helpful for player development.
You also have Brandon Knight is also just on this run. There's like a lot of guards that are all on expiring contracts, so like that's a little bit weird, but there's like a lot of guards for them to like work with.
Who knows, maybe it's like it'll be the competitive you know, spice that everybody needs to be in the contract year.
Yeah, until like one of them's like not playing and then it's just like very awkward and John Beilein's like just like, what do you complain
about? And John Beilein's never been through this before.
Yeah, he's literally like, I've gotten like fringe 100 recruits, and now I'm like, Brandon Knight's making like $14 million, and he's pissed about not playing. Like, it's got like, there's some potential like real weirdness with just this. I want to just see how it plays out as John Beilein. Like,
gotta hope he doesn't go full Hoiberg.
Oh Jesus, that would be bad. Or like, or if he goes like, can't go like Blatt with it either, and just get weird and be like, I've coached in the Final Four. Like,
yeah, I'm a champion. I'm an NCAA champion.
Yeah, like I'm one of the greatest. This is like my last challenge. I've done everything else. Like,
yeah, it's like I coached Mo Wagner and took him to a national championship.
I made Nick Stauskas look like a great player. Shout out to Nick Stauskas. All
right. Yeah, shout out. Is he on the Cavs still? Yeah,
no, and as far as I know, like he's just like hanging out right now. Like he's under consideration for a roster spot, but like can't even get the John Beilein 1 year contract hookup. Like tough look for my guy.
That's tough. That's a tough look. Now, shout out to Nick Stauskas. He had like one of the Blazers' great moments of last season, when he scored like 20 something points yes. against the Lakers.
Yeah.
In the first game of the season, because the Lakers straight up didn't guard him. It was awesome.
And then he like when he got traded, he like was like stuck in the airport with Wade and Baldwin in like Indianapolis, just like hanging out.
Yeah. No. It was a hard crash for old Nick Stauskas.
Yeah, I hope he finds a home.
I hope he does too. He's a really nice guy. Yeah. And that's good, you know. And he's Canadian. Like, I mean, I don't know too many mean Canadians. So.
Yeah, but Justin Rowan's like the only one that I know.
That's true.
Justin sucks. Hi, Justin. So when you look at this Cavs team, when you look at this group and just Sexton and Garland and Love and just what's going on here. What do you just make of this? I just, from someone on the outside, I am just like, I am fascinated by it. I just have like a lot of questions that I know we won't get answers to for a long time. But from the outside looking in, and everything, I mean, you know, about how the wake of LeBron, like, what do you make of this?
I mean, I'm a big Jetty guy. I'm a big Jetty guy.
So I need, like we're, but here's the, it's like, I was looking at, like, I'm working on a piece about, like, what he might get paid next, and I can't, like, because he's on the last year of his rookie deal. I have no idea. Like, his VORP is, like, value, similar to, like.
What does he make, like, $3 million a year right now?
Yeah, it is VORP, his, like, VORP, the VORP comparisons, I like, that are kind of come up in the system for guys in his age range are, like, Kelly Oubre, who just got, like, significantly paid by Phoenix. Stanley Johnson. And I'm going to pull this up so I, like, remember the last
one.
He
does play the right position. I mean, he just really does play the position that everybody's overpaying for. And so
it's like Oubre, Dorian Finney-Smith, and Stanley Johnson are, like, the guys that he, like, compares to.
Yeah, and he's I think everyone thinks he's a better offensive player than pretty much all those guys.
And he should be better in Beeline in an actual system this year. Like, the things he's good at, he's never gotten to do in the NBA. That's just, like...
I'm a big Jetty guy. Like, I'm a big, like... I'm very into Jetty. And I think... Yeah, man. He has the potential to get a huge contract, I feel like.
I think he's, like, perfect for what Beeline's going to do with motion and, like, creative passing. And just, like, him being able to, like, throw more awesome, weird passes is just something I am, like, very excited to see. The problem is, like, the rest of the roster, I just, like, have no idea. There's, like, literally three wings, two of whom are rookies. They just, like, I think as, like, a favor to an agent, like, let David Nwaba just, like, go to Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So they have, like, no defenders on their team. They have a lot of guards.
I mean, the whole no wings thing is kind of cool, though, because you guys just drafted two dudes. Like, I mean, obviously if they get hurt, it kind of sucks, but, like, Kevin Porter Jr. and Dylan Windler, like, you want those guys to play a ton of minutes. Like, there's no way you don't want to have this season happen and not have those guys play a ton of minutes, right?
Yeah. Windler at least is going to come in and just, like, bomb threes. Kevin Porter Jr., I have no idea. Like, there's, like, a wide range of outcomes for him, and that's really interesting. And I just,
I mean, he's a Northwest guy. Yeah. You know, I root for him for that reason.
Like, the structure for him is also really interesting. Like, obviously, like, the stuff at USC is, like, not, like, that's not great. Can't all be on him. But, like, Beeline's going to come in and, like, I think try to run a tight ship. That's going to be really interesting. I just also want to see John Beeline, like, have, like, a 10-minute conversation with Jordan Clarkson.
Yes, that would be...
Like, live stream it.
A conversation on style between John Beeline and Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah, no, I need five rounds. Like, five-minute rounds. Like, one on style, one on, like, music, one on, how they did, like, to play basketball. Just, like, I just need that. I would really just enjoy that. That would just be super.
You are really going to push the limits on two-point guard and three-point guard lineups.
Oh, like there's no way there isn't, like, a game where it's, like, Sexton, Garland, Delly on the floor together.
I mean, isn't that kind of what – I mean, I'm not a huge college basketball guy, but I feel like didn't Beeline's Michigan teams do that a lot where they played, like, four guards at a time? And they, like, yeah. I feel like that's definitely in the cards for this team, which could be cool. I think there's going to be a lot of breaking from the norm – in terms of, like, I feel like there's going to be a lot more creativity this year with lineups in the NBA.
And I think with the Cavs in particular, like, there kind of has to be. They need to be able to have the ball move. They need to be able to just kind of be coherent in some way. I think it's gotta allow Sexton and Garland to be creative. So I want to kind of wrap up on this. When you look at, like, those two guys in this situation, that is, like, weird. And then I kind of want to, we're going to finish on your rough prediction right now for the Blazers, but when you look at, like, what Sexton and Garland are stepping into, like, is there any, like, sort of, like, things you would say, like, statistically, film-wise, whatever, that, like, would be positive indicators of them figuring out some sort of partnership as in year two for Sexton, year one for Garland?
I mean, I think a lot of it is eye test, at least this early.
Yeah.
When it comes to both of them playing together, I don't necessarily know if you can... I mean, there's indicators in things like, you know, lineup data with just those two guys out there that can tell you things. I think at this early stage, you kind of need to see how they play together, how they work together, how they interact with each other. You know, I think a lot of those things are going to be a lot more telling about what their future is going to hold. And then obviously then their skill sets, you know, it's like, I mean, Sexton, obviously, if you just think philosophically about both of their, or holistically, excuse me, about both of their skill sets, like what they could be. I mean, Sexton as like a guy that darts to the basket, gets to the rim, pushes in transition. Garland as a guy that can pull up in the pick and roll, move off the ball and space out. Like, you know, you can see those, that vision of those two guys together, I think. But, you know, you kind of want to see that in practice. You want to see Sexton pushing the ball in transition and Garland trail behind him and or fade to the corner and Sexton finds him for a three. You know, like,
yeah,
those are the type of things that you want to see from those guys that I think more so than necessarily statistical things, you want to see them be able to kind of do those things together and not simply just kind of take turns running the show.
And I also just say, like, if they go make it through the year without having to hold like a press conference a la Kyrie and Deion where they like deny that they don't like each other, like that would be
a huge success. You know this, you guys know this just as well as we do. Like,
I know chaos. I know like a shit show version of Portland. Like, it's not even like the Jennings Monta combo or like trying to make Steph and like Monta work in Golden State or something like that. Cavs and Kyrie and Deion was just like an abomination.
Well, you know what you don't want?
To bring back Mike Brown? Fourth time, baby. Third time.
The man who never stops getting paid.
I mean, respect.
My man, Mike Brown, dude. I have a lot of respect. Is he still getting paid by the Cavs?
I don't think so, but I made a joke when they started the coaching search that like they could have like spun it as like he's been learning under Steve Kerr in the best system in the league, and like it's like he's ready. He's really ready for this time.
Just the press the first report about the coaching move, about how he's grown as a coach.
Yeah, it's like coaching with the Warriors has really expanded him into something new, and then it's like the same like crappy like cramped offense and like the same defense are just like what are we doing here.
I respect Mike Brown.
It'd be great content, honestly.
It would be but I mean, as far as Portland for next year,
what's the take?
I do think that they are going to be in the mix for the Western Conference title. Like, I don't think that that's a hot take. I think that they're going to be right there with Denver and Houston and the Clippers and the Lakers. You know, I think they're in better shape, especially in the regular season, than a lot of those, than the Lakers for sure. The Clippers have some health questions. The Rockets have, you know, just some questions about them. I think they're going to be pretty good, but I just think you want to see that first. I think Utah, I think a lot of people are very quick to anoint them. I like the moves that they made. I like Bogdanovich. I like Mike Conley, but it's like, you know, they still need to figure out some other things on their end, and we still need to see it happen. Donovan Mitchell, is he going to get any better? I mean, there's a whole lot of questions, and I think Portland, having the core that they have with the potential of Nurkic coming back, and I think the moves that they made this offseason – they lost some defensive prowess with Aminu and Harkless, but they gained a lot of offensive firepower outside of Dame and CJ that they just have not had. I mean, you just look at the career numbers of Bazemore and Hezonja and Anthony Tolliver, and you look at all those guys with their three-point shooting, and you just have a lot of guys and a lot of offensive weapons that Dame and CJ have just not had on the wings outside of themselves and maybe Nurkic. And then, you know, you have Hassan Whiteside, which, you know, is a wild card, but I think with two guards that are very great offensive players that you can't just sag off of, you know, even, you know, in Hassan Whiteside's heyday, it was like Tyler Johnson and Dwayne Wade, and Dwayne Wade was great, but you know, you never had to guard him at the 3-point line. You could always go under his screens. You could always go under on those guys for the most part. And you can't do that with Portland's guys. And I think that Whiteside is definitely he's going to have a little bit of a bump. We'll see how long that lasts. But I think he's definitely really going to benefit from having Dame and CJ. And I think they're going to be really good. I think they're going to have home court again. I think they're going to be right in the mix with Denver and Utah for that division. And I think that they'll be very high in the standings, and I think they're going to be a real threat once again in the Western Conference.
They're one of the two teams I think I would enjoy most making out of the West, the other being Denver.
Yeah, I mean, Denver made really good moves. I mean, they made a really good move, period.
Yeah,
I really
like it. Awesome.
The Jeremy Grant move was great. I love that move for them. He gives them a new dimension. But I want to see a little bit more from Jamal Murray. You know, I want to see, you know, Gary Harris going to get better. They have a lot of guys. Those guys are all really good, and I think they're going to be a really good team. I just don't. I don't think anybody has it wrapped up in the West. And I think when you have in a playoff situation, I think last year that was the why they beat Denver, is they just had Dame and CJ, just two guys that can just ball out in any situation on the road, at home. And, I think that matters a ton. I think Houston has a huge chance. The Clippers, the Lakers. I mean, it's going to be a great Western Conference for sure. But I think Portland has a great chance.
Yeah. You can find Eric on Twitter at Eric with a K underscore Gunderson. Again, runs the LeBron Wire, writes for the Associated Press. And hopefully when the Cavs play Blazers, we'll have him back on to talk about it. And he can give us some hopefully you can find Channing Frye somewhere in Portland just like getting fat too. I would very much enjoy that.
I want to find Channing Frye. Next week is Burger Week in Portland.
Oh my God.
So my goal would be to find Channing. And then also, you know, there's the other potential goal of, like, you know, if Cleveland trades Kevin Love home.
Yes, I'll be calling you and being like,
hey. Then we'll have to do a podcast.
Yeah, him like showing up, like just eating the voodoo donuts and like enjoying his life in Portland again. He's Kevin Love star this summer.
For a travel show, right? Like he's totally just trying
or
to
like
get a travel
or Instagram like influencer travel show.
Yeah, like or at least sponsored posts.
Yes.
Like
yes.
He's angling for that lifestyle, but like I really think his dream would be to have like a Bourdain style travel show.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that would be his ideal off-season job.
Yes, 100%. There's like no doubt in my mind that that's like what Kevin Love is angling for. But I feel like it's changed.
Like his post-playing career. He doesn't want to do it like ESPN NBA. He wants to be like a travel analyst.
Yeah, he wants like a YouTube TV original like travel show.
Yeah.
Like that's what Kevin Love is really going for here.
And you know what? More power to him.
Yeah, I hope he gets it. I would watch.
I would watch too. I would 100%. Watch too. Who am I kidding?
Also, I would like if Channing just had like a vlog where he like talked about like his food, his wine, and the comic books he's reading. Also, all the way in. Like just.
Well, you know that the logical next end to Kevin Love having a show is that there are at least one episode with RJ and Channing showing up.
And like that, just repeatedly dunking on him? Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, like that. That's totally happening. Like there's at least one episode, if not multiple. It would be like, fuck, that's delicious for basketball people.
Look, I'm just saying, like, if someone is listening to this and, like, wants to pay Eric and I to, like, come up with the full concept.
We'll write the script.
Like, let's go. Like, we'll plan out their activities. It'll be great.
Yeah,
I'm available. I'm very available.
HBO, Viceland, NBA TV.
Yeah.
Literally all uninterrupted.
Let's go.
Hit us up.
Yeah, we're available. Find Eric on Twitter at Eric_Gunderson, tweet him, and then hire me. I'm on Twitter at CWMWrites. Eric, as always, thanks so much. It was good to chat.
Later, man.